Today's show is brought to you by LootCrate.com. Save 10% on any new subscription by going to trylootcrate.com/armchair. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 to save 10%. Again, that's trylootcrate.com/armchair. Enter promo code BRIDGE10. What is going on, guys? All right, welcome to GoingFor2.com's Armchair Fantasy Sports Show presented by Talk Loud Radio. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Talk Loud Radio, all one word. You can also go to TalkLoudRadio.com, and we are streaming on the GoingFor2 app. All right, guys, we got a very special show today. We've got all four of my Fantasy Pros rankers. We've got four rankers that rank on Fantasy Pros. They're part of the consensus ranking. If you go to that website often, these four guys are part of that ranking as well as myself. So I thought I'd get us on a week before the season kicks off and do a little ranking summit. You know, all of our rankings are pretty much in. It's after week three now, so all the injuries should be out of the way. So we have something to talk about. And basically, we're just going to go through all of our rankings. We'll have a couple ranking battles where I take two of our rankers and kind of pit them against each other to defend a player or defend their position on that player. So without further ado, let's go ahead and introduce the guest list that we have tonight. First up is a returning guest. He's a lead writer for GoingFor2.com. As I mentioned, expert ranker at Fantasy Pros and is the founder of DynastyLeagueProblems.com. And the Facebook group, also called Dynasty League Problems as well. Of course, it's none other than Mike Kelly. You can follow him on Twitter, Mike Kelly, at Mike Kelly DLP. Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you, man. Glad to have you. All right, next up is another returning guest. He hasn't been on for a while, but he's been on a few times. Also lead writer at GoingFor2.com and expert ranker at Fantasy Pros. You can follow him on Twitter at jfox023. And, of course, that's Jared Fox. Jared, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on, man. All right. I believe this is his first appearance on our podcast. Lead writer for GoingFor2.com, ranker and contributor for Fantasy Pros, also a contributor for DailyOverlay.com, which is basically Fantasy Pros for Daily Fantasy. You could follow him on Twitter at RotoPilot, and that's Brad Richter. How you doing tonight?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on. And finally, we got the guy simply known as Fantasy Beast, also lead writer at GoingFor2.com, expert ranker at Fantasy Pros, and is the founder of FantasyBeast15.com. You could follow him on Twitter at FantasyBeast15. How you doing, Fantasy Beast?
Doing great. Excited to be on. It's my first time.
Yes, definitely. I'm glad to have you on. You've been writing this for about a year, a little over a year, right now?
Yep, a little over a year.
Good deal. Good deal. Glad to get you on. All right. So before we get started, listeners, if you want to follow along with our rankings, you can always find those, of course, at GoingFor2.com, just in the drop-down menu under season long. And then, of course, go to Fantasy Football, and you will see our preseason rankings. Our week one ranking should be up pretty soon. They've already got the week one ranking tool up for us to use, so we will get those up pretty soon in the next couple of days so you can get your week one rankings in. All right, so before we get into any kind of ranking battles, I just want to go around the league, a couple of hot topics around the league, you know, injuries, different strategies and stuff like that. So I'm going to go through each one of our writers here, our rankers, and just kind of ask them a question and allow them to answer and then maybe get some feedback from the other guys. Mike, we'll start with you. So we still don't know Andrew Luck's status for week one or going further from week one. Word is he may not play week one, and we don't know how he's going to be effective when he does come back. So my question is, if you're drafting today or tomorrow, are you drafting Andrew Luck at all? And if so, what round do you think you're going to draft him in?
Well, I think to avoid Andrew Luck is not a good idea, but truth of the matter is quarterback position is so deep this year. You know, if you're talking, you know, 8, 10, 12 team league, you probably play without drafting Andrew Luck. But if you're in, you know, 14, 16 team league, it's probably very wise of you to make sure you get Andrew Luck at some point, because if he does make it, he does have a favorable schedule. He doesn't have any bad weather games. And, you know, he's not a rookie, so he knows what he's doing. He can come in and probably get to game pretty quickly and have him late in the season, and you can get him late in your draft. I think it's worth it. So I'm probably looking 7th, 8th round is where I'd be, because I probably have to make sure I got a decent quarterback first, because if my first pick is Andrew Luck and he doesn't come back till halfway through the year or whatever, I could be in a lot of trouble. So if I'm going to take him, I'm going to have some good players up front, get a quarterback, and then maybe back-to-back quarterbacks in, you know, 8th, 9th round around that time and try to steal him at that point.
Gotcha. So kind of a strategy like they did last year with Tom Brady, where you're basically getting him really late with the intention of using him late in the season. So sort of the same feel for Andrew Luck. So you're going to have a quarterback first before you draft Luck. So Luck won't be your QB1 to start the season. Is that right?
Probably not, unless he falls really late and I'm avoiding him. But otherwise, I think it's too risky, because I feel like with the Colts, I'm looking at Peyton Manning that year he missed, where they just constantly kept kicking the can down the road, and they finally said, nope, he's out for the year. And it's heart-wrenching that if you don't have Andrew Luck and you draft him early and you can't get into him, you're in for a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I have to say, I probably agree with that as well. All right, let's go ahead and move over to the Cowboys here. Jared, I know you're a Cowboys fan, so I wanted to ask this question to you. With this whole Ezekiel Elliott thing, of course, you know, he's dropped a little bit in rounds. So if, for one, are you planning to draft Ezekiel Elliott in any of your redraft leagues? And two, are you going to handcuff him with a Cowboys running back, meaning Derek McFadden or Alfred Morris? And if you're not going to do that with one of the Cowboys running backs, who are you looking at in those late rounds to handcuff Ezekiel Elliott with? Jared? Maybe we lost Jared. All right, so let me pass this question on over to Brad, if you're there, if you can answer that question for us. Ezekiel Elliott, are you planning to draft him, and are you going to handcuff him?
Yeah, sure. I am planning on drafting him still. I'd even be willing to take him as early as late 2nd, 3rd round in a shallower type league that would have short benches or 10 or 12 team league. Where there's some free agents and things like that to be able to pick up. If I handcuff him, I'll probably handcuff him to McFadden. I just feel like he's got the most ability within the offense. He'll be catching the ball and running the ball, where Morris would just probably be getting some carries. One other strategy that I've bantered about a little bit is pivoting away from the Cowboys' backup running backs and shifting over to a guy like Jack Quiz Rogers. Take a look at him. He'll be the main running back for the Bucs for the first 3 weeks, at least get you covered through the first 3 weeks, and then look into the free agent market to see if you can find somebody else to cover the additional weeks that Zeke's out.
Yeah, I kind of like that strategy as well. I think Zeke is just, he's too hard to pass up. I'm trying to get Jared back on the phone here. We did get disconnected, so I'm trying to get him back on the phone here as we kind of talk through this.
I'm back. Sorry about that, guys.
All right, no problem. All right, Jared. We went ahead and answered the Ezekiel Elliott question, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you again, since you are a Cowboys fan and, you know, you're down there in that area. So, one, are you planning to draft Ezekiel Elliott, and are you handcuffing him with the Cowboys running back, or are you looking somewhere else for a running back?
I really wish we could have gotten a pill answer quicker on this situation, but I really think that he'll get his suspension reduced down to 3 or 4 games probably, if I had to guess. So a 3rd-round pick on Zeke would be ideal, and I would follow that with maybe obviously getting Darren McFadden. I think that's a perfect pick, good in the passing game, good for PPR. And then if I missed him, I would go with like a Terrence West or a Frank Gore, or maybe like a Theo Riddick in a PPR format.
All right, good deal. So I think we're pretty much all in agreement that if Zeke falls to the late 2nd, early 3rd, I think we're drafting him, right?
Definitely.
I would.
Yep.
All right. All right. All right, Brad, let's move on to your question now. So give me a wide receiver that's currently being drafted outside of the top 30 in receivers that has the best chance to finish the season as a top 10 receiver.
All right, I'm going to cheat a little. I'm going to give you two. I got one guy that's just inside the top 30, so I'm going to cheat a tiny bit. Go with Kelvin Benjamin. He's currently being taken 24th ADP, according to Fantasy Pros. He ranked 15th back in 2014 at the wide receiver position. And then after missing the whole 2015 season with the torn ACL, he bounced back last year to still finish 25th at the position. He's now 2 years removed from that injury and entering his third full season. You know, he's a big, wide body. He's done good during the preseason this year. And I think for a receiver to jump up into that top 10, he needs to be able to score touchdowns. And Benjamin's capable of scoring double-digit scores this year. The second guy I have is Tyrell Williams from the Chargers, currently going 43rd in consensus ADP on Fantasy Pros. Kind of burst on the scene last year when the Chargers' receiving core got depleted by injury. Ended up finishing 18th at the position. I know Keenan Allen's returning this year, and they drafted Mike Williams, but with Williams' injury, I think Terrell's role is pretty safe on the team, and he definitely has all the physical tools and ability to score from both long range or within the red zone. He had 7 TDs last year, so I don't think him jumping up to score 10 this year would be out of the question, especially with a good quarterback like Rivers throwing ball.
Exactly, exactly. I love that call, actually. Kelvin Benjamin's ADP kind of slipped a little bit when they had all that weight issues going on. But I think he's kind of come back, you know, with the good preseason that he's had. His ADP has been rising, but I can definitely see him finishing as a top 10 receiver. And Tyrell Williams, I hope you're right on him, because I have him and Keenan Allen on my team. I had Keenan Allen on my dynasty team last year, drafted him. Of course, he got injured in that first game. I added Tyrell Williams, and I've been sort of sticking with both of them for a while, hoping that they can come back and be strong. So I hope you're right on Tyrell Williams, because I would love that for my dynasty team.
Yeah.
All right. We had lost Fantasy Beast for a little bit. Are you back now?
I am here.
All right. Good deal. All right, Fantasy Beast, give me one running back currently being drafted as a top 10 running back that has the potential to finish outside the top 20. In other words, of the top 10 running backs, who do you trust the least?
I'm assuming we're skipping Ezekiel Elliott on this one since he'll miss those first 6 games. So I'm going to go with Jordan Howard, especially in PPR leagues. Last season, out of the guys who are going in the top 10 in their in PPR league ADP right now, Howard ranked 9th in receptions, only with Jay Ajayi behind him. And I think with Vegas having the Bears team win total set low, I think it's a little bit under 5.5 games right now. And especially after they lost Cameron Meredith probably for the season today, I think the Bears offense is really going to struggle, which it creates short drives. It doesn't lead to a lot of rushing success. And with Howard not being a great pass catcher, I think that he's going to have a really hard time fitting in PPR leagues into that top 10. I still have him ranked 9th because I think he'll get plenty of usage, but I can see a really challenging path for him this season.
All right. All right. So you're kind of contributing the Bears' potential struggles on offense as what's going to keep Howard from finishing in the top 10. Mike, what do you think of that call on Jordan Howard?
I'm not so sure I agree. I think I like Howard. I think he runs well. He has a nice high average. He hits the corner, hits the burst of speed. I do agree his lack of receptions hurt him. I don't think he goes outside the top 20. I think he stays in that 8 to 10 range pretty comfortably. He just runs so well. I mean, everyone last year, they won, 5 games, and he still was able to run as much as he did and not starting the first couple of games. So I think, you know, people know it's coming, but John Fox loves to run the ball. He's committed to running the ball, and I think that's only going to help Howard, and it's going to keep him up there.
Sounds good. I actually know the guy that you would put outside the top 20, but we'll get to that later in the podcast because I know you're not a big fan of one of these running backs, but we'll get to him in a little bit. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about this week 3. I mean, it was sort of like season-ending injury after season-ending injury. It was kind of ridiculous, especially for those of us that play in Dynasty. We're kind of holding our breath in week 3 because, you know, all of our guys are playing and it means nothing. We hope they don't get hurt. we had three pretty big names as far as for fantasy football goes go down. Two of them have been confirmed as being out for this season, and one of them we suspect will be out for this season. I wanted to get y'all thoughts on, let's start with Julian Edelman, and Brad, we'll start with you. What's your thoughts on Julian Edelman being out, and who does that help in that offense?
Sure. I think it doesn't affect Brady at all. I mean, I don't think it's going to matter. Just plug and play different guys into that system. They have enough other guys that can fill that type of role that I don't think it's going to affect him at all. I do think it gives Cooks a slight bump up. I think it just kind of solidifies that he's going to get the monster share of the targets there and usage. Beyond that, I think it also helps Hogan the most, Chris Hogan. Probably moving to the outside. Cooks might get a little more time in the slot potentially with Hogan moving to the outside. And kind of I think the sneaky part of it might be a couple of the pass-catching running backs. Could see a lot more of White or Burkhead being split out, potentially working in the slot or in other formations to get a little more usage in the passing game as well.
Yeah, I like that as well. I think it's not a clear-cut bump in ranking as far as, you know, drafting your guys. I think the Patriots sort of spread it around so much that, you know, losing one guy just bumps everyone up just a little bit. It's not really like a huge bump for anybody. Jared, what do you think about Julian Edelman going down? What do you think this is going to do to this offense?
Luckily, I hadn't been targeting him in drafts, so I'm pretty happy there. Really stink to see him go down, though. I'm on board with Chris Hogan for sure. I think that that's going to help him out a lot. He's going to be a real deep sleeper for us. Coming off a career year, 680 yards, 4 touchdowns. I think Cooks' value stays about the same. Brady, Gronk, about the same. But Hogan, he's going to be the guy to target.
All right, and you probably get him super late. I know as soon as Edelman went down, that was the hot waiver wire pickup that if you already drafted that everyone was trying to go scramble to get, especially because I think that game that Edelman got hurt, I think Hogan had a huge game, so that really boosted up his draft status. All right, let's move on to the running back that went down. Of course, the Kansas City Chiefs. Spencer Ware goes down with an injury, already rolled out for the season. It was kind of speculated already that he might lose his job to the rookie there. Of course, now that he's actually out for the season, the rookie will kind of step into that position. I can't think of his name now. I know his last name is Hunt. I can't think of his first name. I don't know why it's escaping me right now.
Green.
What was it?
Green Hunt.
Yes, that's right. Okay. All right. I don't know why that was kind of missing me right now. All right. So we'll start with Fantasy Beast. What is your thoughts on Spencer Ware going down, and what does that do for the rookie?
Ware was a guy I was targeting in the mid rounds of the draft, fifth, sixth round, something like that. He's a guy who I thought was being undervalued entering the year. So I've got quite a few shares of Spencer Ware that are all for nothing right now. But I think I moved Kareem Hunt somewhere into that late third round. And I think it's not a reach to be drafting him in that third round. He's going to have most of the role in Kansas City, a role that's been fairly decent lately. I think Ware was struggling a little bit last year, but still had a good start to the year. I think Kareem Hunt can step right in there. He's able to catch passes. He's got a solid, if unspectacular, offense. And with Alex Smith not being a high volume guy, I think they'll be looking to give Kareem Hunt the ball as much as he can handle. And so I think he's very fair to be drafting him in the third and fourth round.
All right. Third and fourth round. Mike, what say you on Spencer Ware and the injury there, and who does it help?
Well, I agree with Fantasy Beast. I think a lot of people were counting Spencer Ware out before they should have. I didn't think Hunt was really in line to really affect Spencer Ware's production. Now, obviously, the injury changes everything. Hunt did already surpass Patrick West before the injury even happened. So, yeah, I think he gets a huge bump. You know, he's going to be no worse than what Spencer Ware did last year. Might even be a little bit better. So I'm on board with Fantasy Beast there. I think, you know, he's certainly in a run-first offense, a play-it-safe offense, solid defensive team, good special teams. You know, I just see Hunt getting a lot of work now that Ware is out of the way, and I don't think West is enough to really challenge him. And it's his job now for the whole year, as long as he wants it.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think Hunt is definitely the guy you want to target now. Of course, He is sort of like, I think they would have shared carries to some extent. I think Spencer Ware would have probably gotten the bulk of it. You know, the rookie would have come in on a couple snaps here and there. But now that Ware's out of the way, I think it's Hunt's job to lose. And I think he'll, from what I've seen in preseason so far, he's been pretty good. So I think he will have a pretty decent season. I think he's definitely worth drafting in, you know, that fourth or fifth round as a RB2. All right, so the other guy that we got on this list is Cameron Meredith. Of course, he went down today. We don't know if he's officially ruled out. At least I haven't heard if he's officially ruled out yet, but we're suspecting that he's probably going to be out for the season. Brad, we'll go with you first. What are your thoughts on Cameron Meredith, and what does it do to this Bears offense and the players that are there?
Definitely just hurts the Bears offense even further. One of their, you know, guys that they were going to rely on as one of their playmakers in that offense. But it kind of just moves everybody up the line. I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on Kevin White to perform. They're probably going to have to force him the ball somewhat and see if he can live up to his first round pick a couple years back. So he'll definitely see an increase in targets. Beyond that, I think maybe Kendall Wright could see a bump as well. I think he was probably going to be playing in the slot, so I don't know if it directly affects, you know, the snap counts that he was going to have. But he should definitely probably be more involved and be targeted more frequently with the if Meredith is out.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Bears offense was probably going to be pretty bad already. And now that they've lost Meredith, this is going to be even worse. And Glennon hasn't looked very good in preseason either, so I don't know how that's going to affect the passing game if he's got his basically number one receiver. Now it's also down. Kevin White hasn't showed us anything yet. I mean, he's been injured, you know, more than he's been on the field. You got Kendall Wright, who's kind of fell out of favor in Tennessee, so who knows what he has to offer. I think it hurts the team all around. I think you can pretty much downgrade pretty much everyone on this team, including Jordan Howard. I think the passing game, you know, with being non-existent now, pretty much is going to affect Jordan Howard to some extent. What say you on this, Jared? What do you think about Cameron Meredith going down? What does it do to this team?
Completely agree with everything y'all just said. I think it kills Jordan Howard's value unless he starts catching more passes out of the backfield, which the quarterback play, just I don't see that being too effective. One guy that could be interesting that I'd like to see would be Marcus Wheaton. Maybe this will give him an opportunity to shine for once. Now that he's out of the Pittsburgh Steelers with Antonio Brown and whatnot.
Marcus Wheaton, man, I think we talk about him every single year, it seems. He always seems to be that this is the breakout year. This is the year he breaks out, and he always seems to let us down. But maybe he's got to change the scenery now. Maybe he can actually do something this year. So Marcus Wheaton, definitely, if you're in a deeper league, something to look at in those late rounds. I wouldn't draft him in a 10- or 12-team league, but if we're doing a 14-, 16-team, it's something you might want to look at with Marcus Wheaton there. All right, so let's go. I'm going to go around the table here. We're just going to do a question for everybody. I want you to give me one thing when you're going into your drafts. You know, we're talking like live drafts here where you're actually going to show up to a bar or someone's house and you're going to do this draft. I want to know one thing that you always make sure you do and one thing that you make sure you never do. Mike, we'll go with you first.
The one thing I never do, quick little backstory is, you know, first season I ever played was in 1991. And anyone that's, you know, been around football since then will know that Randall Cunningham was a super rare quarterback. You know, skill set was, you know, the first of these really true scrambling quarterbacks. And I got the first overall pick. I was so excited. Got Randall Cunningham. First play of the second quarter in Green Bay, Bryce Pop goes low, tours his ACL, killed my entire season. And I've never drafted a quarterback since in the first round. Used to do it. I don't care. It ain't happening. And then something I always do, really has started in recent years. One of my dynasty leagues has been going on for over 20 years now. And when I get together with the guys in my league, I like to do a little mock draft for them. Like, I'll pull a little Mel Kiper on them and I tell them who they should be picking, what their weaknesses are on their team, what they should be doing. And it just mind screws with them so much. They don't know if I'm serious. They don't know if I'm kidding. They don't know if I'm trying to manipulate them. And it's usually very sincere. I really give them honest advice and they don't trust it. And they doubt themselves because they always feel like I have some trick up my sleeve and I'm doing something that's going to benefit me in the long run. And it's just fun watching them battle with the decision. Is he being serious or is he being fake?
Nice. I love it. I love it. Playing mind games before the season even starts. I love it. All right, Brad, let's go to you. What do you do and what do you never do in your drafts?
From a do perspective, I'd say make sure you have a plan. I think it's worth having a draft plan, have a feel for what you're thinking you're going to do based on where your draft position is or how you're going to allocate your auction dollars. But make sure that with that plan, you're also giving yourself some leverage to be flexible within that plan. And if you see a draft going one way, you're able to zig while the rest of them are zagging and such within their draft. That way you can come out of the draft with a lot of good value and a deep and complete roster that allow you to compete during the season. From a don't perspective, I'd say don't get drunk. Yeah, I've seen it too many times, people getting drunk either before the draft even starts, during or after, you know, and it always ends up in either somebody, you know, drafting a kicker in the third round or, you know, budget, you know, spending big bucks on a third quarterback or even ending up in a fist fight or making some stupid trade, you know, after the draft that you'll regret the rest of the season. So I'm all for having a few beverages while you're partaking, but be monitoring what you're doing so you don't make those crucial mistakes.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Actually, you kind of stole my thunder because that was my never do as well. Never get drunk. So good one. Good one. All right, let's go to you, Fancy Beast. What you got for me?
The one thing I make sure I do in every single draft is I make sure I know my league before I start. So even if it's a league that I've never participated in, if it's had a history, I'll ask the commissioner to see the standings from the previous year, the draft overview from the previous year, and I'll try and learn everything I can about certain owners so that I can attack it during the draft. I live in Wisconsin, so I have a whole bunch of Packers homers in a couple of the drafts that I do. So I know that Aaron Rodgers is going in the first three picks on every draft I do. So I make sure that I'm focused and I don't get caught up on a quarterback run or try to get some Packer players. I just attack the value. And if you're able to do that and you know your league and you know who likes the early quarterback and who takes their defense too early, I think you get a real advantage in your league. The one thing I never do is I try to avoid drafting a kicker at all costs. So some drafts force you to take a kicker, in which case I'll take them in the last round. But some platforms don't actually make you take a kicker. So if that's the case, I won't draft one, and I'll just stock up on a couple of high flyer guys that I like at the late rounds. And then by the time week one rolls around, I'll cut the guy I'm least happy with and replace him with a kicker. So if your league doesn't make you take a kicker, I never do. And even if I'm forced to take a kicker, like ESPN makes you fill out your roster, I'll just cut my kicker as soon as the draft is over to pick up someone I like and then make that decision a little bit later, closer to week one.
I love it. Actually, you just both stole my thunder too, because I actually do the same thing. I don't draft kickers either. I wait until right before the season to add my kicker. So that's something that I do in every draft that I go into, because having that upside, you know, flyer sort of running back or receiver on your roster that, you know, could potentially be something in the preseason is a lot better than having a kicker hold space when basically a kicker is a kicker is a kicker, basically. I mean, you can get anybody. As long as you aren't getting a Browns kicker, you're probably in good shape. All right, Jared, take us home. What you got for our do and don't?
On my don't, I'm on the same page as Fantasy Beast here, except what I'll say is I usually reserve my second to last pick for a defense. I'm all about streaming defenses every year. There's no point. I don't see any point in using a pick on the Broncos or Seahawks because eventually they're going to play a Patriots or a Falcons offense. One thing that I do like to do, though, is make sure I'm prepared and have my tiers ready. I'm all about tier-based drafting. You never know what's going to happen in your drafts. You never know when you're going to get somebody random just taking in somebody out of order. So what you want to do is have your tiers ready and be prepared for anything that's going to come at you.
Love it. Love it. All right, guys. Great stuff there. I was going to give you my do's and don'ts, but you guys took them already. So I'm just going to move on to the next segment here. All right. So I'm going to go around the table again, and I want y'all to think about the totality of your fantasy career as it is. And I want you to give me that one guy that you consider your fantasy MVP. Like, if we can go and get every player you've ever owned, any draft, put them in their prime, who is your number one overall pick? Mike, we'll go with you first.
This actually has a special place in my heart because I do a lot of dynasty. So, you know, I've had guys who have had their entire careers on my roster. And one of those guys is my MVP is Maurice Jones-Drew. took him his rookie year. He only played for me in my entire league, never played for anyone else. We won technically three titles together, but the year after he retired, I was in the championship game. I had a roster spot. I picked him up just so he can get one more ring with me. So MJD is the guy that has been one of my favorites, you know, in my time at fantasy football.
That's awesome. Actually, you've heard that story before, and this is kind of what inspired this question because I knew you were going to go there with it. So I want to get my listeners out there to hear that story as well. That's awesome. Add a guy that's not even playing in the league so he can get one more ring. So that's pretty cool. All right, Brad, let's go to you next. What you got for me?
Well, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but I'm going to go with Isaac Bruce as my all-time fantasy MVP from back in the 1995 season when I discovered him in the last round of my draft.
Nice, nice.
He ended up posting 119 catches, 1,781 yards, and 13 touchdowns that year, and obviously helped lead me to the championship with that production on your last pick.
Nice. Beautiful. All right, Fancy Beast, what you got?
For me, my favorite fantasy player ever is Brian Westbrook. It was the first time I ever won a fantasy football championship back in 2006. I had Westbrook and Frank Gore as my running back core. And then in 2007, I repeated with Westbrook when he had 2,100 total yards, 12 touchdowns, and 90 catches. He was just a stud back then, especially in PPR leagues, which weren't quite as popular. But I just loved Brian Westbrook, and those 2 years I always remember.
Nice, nice. All right, Jerry, what you got for me?
I'm going to pick a guy from probably one of my favorite fantasy football seasons, the 2012 season, Adrian Peterson. I think I got him. That's coming off his major knee surgery. I think I got him in the third round, and he ended up single-handedly leading it to the championship, lost one game that year. By far, one of my favorite seasons.
Nice, nice. All right, I'm going to give you my MVP, but then I'm actually going to give you a different player that I consider an MVP as well because of what I did with him. My MVP for my career is Marshall Faulk. My very first draft ever in any fantasy football I've never played before, I ended up getting Marshall Faulk. Won the league my first year and then repeated the following year. So my first 2 years playing in fantasy football, I won both years, mostly due to Marshall Faulk. But I'm going to tell a story about Adrian Peterson in that same year that Jared's talking about. I actually didn't draft Adrian Peterson this year. I actually picked up Jamal Charles, and I had him on my roster. And basically, out of my first seven picks, all of them were injured. They all went out for the season. I think I had MJD. I think he was one of the ones that got injured that year. I had the receiver from Green Bay, whose name escapes me right now, but he got injured and went down for the year. I had Minnesota's Piercy Harvin. He had a good start to the season, then he went out for the year. I mean, it was like I lost all of my picks. All I had was Jamal Charles and Tom Brady. I basically took Tom Brady and I packaged him with a guy that's and I can't think of his name either, played for Detroit. I packaged Tom Brady and this running back that ended up doing nothing in his career for Adrian Peterson, and it's sort of the third or fourth game of the year. And turned that into a championship run riding the back of Jamal Charles and Adrian Peterson's, you know, phenomenal year where this guy that, traded for Tom Brady, he had a decent season, but the running back that I traded for, I think the very first week I was a little upset because that guy actually played an early game and he had like four touchdowns in that game. And I was pissed because I was like, oh man, I just traded this guy away. He's going to be the next big thing. He had four touchdowns and 4 yards. I think he rushed for 1 yard each time. And then Adrian Peterson actually played the late game that night, and he rushed for 200 and some odd yards and 2 touchdowns. So I felt much better after that late game. So it was kind of cool to kind of ride that. My friend is still pissed to this day about that. And if he hears his podcast, he's probably pissed that I shared it once again. But it was a pretty awesome year for me to ride basically Peterson and Charles and a bunch of scrubs to the championship game. So it was pretty nice of a year. All right, so we're going to take a commercial break here, and then when we come back, we're going to do some ranking battles, and we'll talk some sleepers as well.
Do you need advice for your fantasy football team? How about your DraftKings or FanDuel lineup? GoingForTwo.com has you covered. GoingForTwo.com has exclusive content from some of the best fantasy writers in the industry, whose credentials include Bleacher Report, Fantasy Pros, and Fantasy Life. From advice columns to player ranks, GoingForTwo.com has it all. Sign up for our newsletter to have all of our content sent to your inbox. Start winning today. Visit goingfortwo.com because no one remembers the extra point.
All right. Welcome back. All right. This is sort of the big segment here that I was looking forward to for this whole podcast. I'm basically going to take one player that two of our rankers disagree on and sort of pit them against each other on this player. They'll both get a chance to talk, both get a chance to either defend their player or to tear that player down and tell you why you shouldn't draft him. And then the three rankers that are not part of the debate will actually vote to see who actually won the debate. So the first guy up that I got here is LeSean McCoy. The two rankers that we have, we've got Brad Richter, who is the highest on LeSean McCoy. He has him currently ranked as number 4 overall. And then Mike Kelly, who seems to hate LeSean McCoy because he's got him ranked at number 15. So Brad, we'll give you the floor first. I want you to tell me why we should be drafting LeSean McCoy as the number 4 pick overall.
All right. Well, I mean, I think every player outside the top three selections has their fair share of question marks, whether it's health or regression or coaching changes, things along those lines. So, you know, I can go anywhere with my pick between the 4 and the end of the first round. So I'll preface it with that. But McCoy's health is always his primary concern. I'm sure that's what Mike is going to bring up. But he's played in at least 15 games in 3 of his last 4 seasons. And while he's logged quite a few carries over his career, he's still just 29 years old, which is, you know, before a typical cliff for an NFL running back. McCoy's role is extremely safe and couldn't even expand this season. He only had 234 carries last year and gave up 8 touchdowns to Mike Gillisley, who, of course, is no longer on the team. He's a big part of the passing game, so that helps ensure he stays on the field even if the Bills are losing. Gives him a high floor, to steal a DFS term. And looking back at some of McCoy's history, some of his best seasons are when he's got a mobile quarterback with him, going back to his years in Philly with Michael Vick, and then last year with Tyrod Taylor. So to me, McCoy is a relatively safe choice and definitely also has some potential upside that warrants strong consideration for the number 4 pick.
All right. Good stuff. All right, Mike, tell us why we should not be drafting LeSean McCoy. Basically, in the first 14 picks, you want him at number 15.
To preface things, I do so much dynasty. Even when I do redraft rankings, it's hard for me to turn off my dynasty brain. So that probably hurt him a little bit. And you know, for Brad, just so you know, I wasn't going to go after the injuries because I do know, you know, he does play a lot of games. He's only missed, I think, 11 games in 7 years total, which is not bad for a running back with, you know, 2,000 touches, 400 receptions. So that's pretty good. So I think he's done well. I think a lot of people think he's always injured because he seems to always be on the injury report as questionable going into the game, but he always plays. So I will give him that. But it is the mileage. It is his age. I think 29 is, you know, outside of Frank Gore, we haven't had too many running backs in recent years play into their 30s. And Buffalo might be competing with the Jets for, you know, the biggest rebuild, and they've already talked about trading him, and they said no we're not trading him, and I just feel like, you know, they're not going to lean on McCoy the way Sexy Rexy did and some of his coaches before him, and I just think they're going to try to be a little more balanced. I think they're gonna, you know, they retooled a lot of pieces already. I think Jonathan Williams is gonna do a little bit more than Gillespie did. And I just, you know, 15 might be a little harsh, probably because of his age is probably where I put him. But I don't think I could justify him, you know, inside my top 10 for sure. But I'm not saying he's going to be horrible, but I just think they're not going to lean on him anymore like they used to.
All right. Good stuff. All right, so I'm going to just go to the three of us that, you know, that weren't part of the debate, and I just want you to tell me who you voted for and a quick little thing as to why you think so. Jared, who you got winning this debate?
I've got Brad, just because I've got McCoy ranked, I believe, sixth in my PPR format, and they don't have any other options.
Okay, agreed. All right, Fantasy Beats, what you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Brad as well. I just think that they might not try and run McCoy into the ground, but then again, he probably doesn't have too much left. And with his contract that Buffalo has with him, I think it's possible that they just run him like crazy just to gain something for their fans. I mean, I don't think they have too much to hold on to this year.
All right. And I'm just going to add insult to injury and also vote for Brad as well. I actually had McCoy ranked, I think, a little higher than some people, but I think McCoy, the 29 years of age, that kind of hurts me a little bit. I think he does run down just a little bit. The mileage is a little bit rough. I'd have a hard time taking him fourth. Now I can probably take him sixth or seventh. I wouldn't go quite down to 15 like Mike did, but I'm going to give my vote to Brad as well. All right, next one up, we got AJ Green. Two guys on the opposite side of the fence here. We got Fantasy Beast, has him ranked the highest at number 6. And we have Jared Fox, who has him ranked the lowest at number 13. Jared, let's go with you first.
All right, so I'm probably going to hear some scrutiny for this one. But I just think that there are better receivers out there at the draft spot that AJ's getting taken. I'm on Team Jordy and Team Mike Evans this year. Both have better quarterbacks. Both should see plenty of targets and touchdown opportunities. Green's coming in this year with the Bengals adding two new offensive weapons in Mixon and Ross. So those could take away some of his targets, probably not many. And, you know, kind of like LeSean McCoy, he's 29. He's reached his peak, you know, coming off an injury. I just think that I would take him outside the top 10.
All right, Fancy Beast, tell us why you want to keep him as your what do you have as number, what did I say, number 4?
I think I've got him 6.
6, that's right.
Yeah, I think that at age 29, it's a lot different for a wide receiver than a running back, so I think he's actually squarely in his prime at age 29. Last season, he had that hamstring injury. I think he's had plenty of time to recover, so I'm not too worried about that. I think last year, if you exclude the game against Buffalo where he hurt his hamstring, he averaged more than 11 targets and 20.7 PPR points per game. That pace would have made him last year's number one wide receiver, beating Antonio Brown by 24 PPR points throughout the year. So I think that the upside is there with Green. I actually think Ross and Mixon help AJ Green. I think they take a little bit of pressure off of him and maybe increase that efficiency with Andy Dalton a little bit more. So I'm fine with Green. I like Jordy and Evans as well. I think he's right there in that territory, but I have no problem taking Green inside my top 6.
All right, good stuff. All right, Mike, we'll go with you first. I want you to vote. Who do you like here? Fantasy Beast side of at number 6, or are you more towards Jared Fox with at number 13 on AJ Green?
Now, full disclosure, I have man crush on AJ Green, so I'm going with Fantasy Beast. I think I completely agree with everything. I think he's in his prime. I think he's great. I'm not doubting him at all.
All right, good deal. Brad, what about you? Who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Jared. I think the more and more drafts I'm doing, the more and more I'm pushing down some of those receivers after Antonio Brown and siding with running backs. So I'm with Jared.
All right, good stuff. I'm going to be the tiebreaker here. I'm going to vote for a Fantasy Beast only because of what Jared had said. I liked AJ Green a lot, and what Jared, I'm sorry, with Fantasy Beast has said about him, you know, being helped by those new weapons. I think that I agree with that as well. I actually had that same stat that he did, that he would have been the number one receiver had he stayed on that pace when he got injured, if we didn't include that one game where I think he had like one target, one catch for like 1 yard or something. If we didn't include that game when he got hurt, he was on a ridiculous pace to basically break some good records as far as fantasy receivers go. So I think he looked good in preseason. I think he's back to what he should be. And I think Dalton, you know, trust him. I think he goes to him early and often. And I think AJ Green is a top receiver there. All right. Next up, I had to put this one in there. If Gerson, if you're out there listening, this one's for you, because I know you know how much I love Mike Evans. So I got Mike Evans at number 4. And Brad, I believe you're the lowest of all of our rankers at number 13. I'll let you have the floor first. Tell me why we should be drafting Mike Evans outside the top 10.
Okay. Well, I kind of alluded to it a little bit in that last answer about picking Jared. The more and more I'm doing drafts, the more and more I'm pushing some of these receivers down and pulling up some of those running backs like the Melvin Gordons, Devonta Freeman's, Jay Ajayi's, and LeSean McCoy's up ahead of those guys. I just have more confidence in the second round receivers. So even if I miss out on an Evans, I'm more confident in the second round receivers that I can get than I am in the second round running backs that I can get oftentimes. You know, Evans could see a little regression in targets this year, I think, as well. Winston being in his third season, a lot of times quarterbacks in their first couple seasons really zero in on one guy because they aren't mature enough to read defenses to go to their other progressions. But now this year, in his third year, I think he's ready to take that next step. Plus, they added a bunch of weapons with Jackson and O.J. Howard at tight end. I think that might also peel a few targets away from Evans. So nothing against Evans. He's still in that upper tier of wide receivers that I would consider for the late first round, early second round. But he doesn't quite make it for me as far as a top 5-6 pick.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. I actually, like I mentioned, I actually love Mike Evans. I think I actually have him ranked as the number 2 receiver overall, right behind Antonio Brown. So I am big on Mike Evans, and I've heard all the arguments as to why I should not be big on him. I've heard the DeSean Jackson, that he's going to take targets away from him, but DeSean Jackson has never been a high target receiver. He does most of his damage with a few targets and just the big plays. If we were to take his career season, which was 2013, he had 126 targets. If we were to take those targets and put that into 2016 season, he would have been ranked behind Kyle Rudolph, Greg Olsen, and Brandon Marshall, who's not exactly, you know, they're not huge target monsters as far as, you know, the today's NFL goes. So I don't think that his targets necessarily going to go up a huge amount. Even last year, he had in 15 games, he had 100 targets, which tied him with AJ Green, who only played 9 games. So I think target wise, I don't think DeSean Jackson gets too many more targets. I don't think he's going to take away too much from Mike Evans. If anything, I think it makes Mike Evans more open. He won't be double teamed quite as much. I think it makes the targets that he was getting, he may get a few less this year, but I think he makes him more efficient because he won't be double teamed quite as much. The O.J. Howard thing, I've heard that argument as well. I don't think Howard's going to be good in season one. If you go back and look at the history of tight ends, the hardest thing to transition to is tight end. A lot of, you know, top tier tight ends have struggled their first year outside of Gronk. I think he was the one tight end that's actually, you know, had a good first season. But, you know, Kelce and Eifert and Jordan Reed, they all had bad first seasons. So I think O.J. Howard will have a decent rookie season for a tight end, but he's not going to take away too many targets from Mike Evans. And the last thing is the running game is kind of suspect. We don't know what's going on with Doug Martin, you know, with the suspension. Will he start when he comes back? Jacquizz Rodgers has always been sort of that smallish guy who can't seem to hold the load. So I think when they get down to the red zone, I think Evans is still the top, you know, option in the red zone. You know, they're not going to run the ball in. I don't think that DeSean Jackson is any kind of red zone threat. He's more of the 50 yards and beyond kind of threat. So I think Evans still gets a good amount of targets, becomes more efficient with those targets, and is still the red zone threat that he was last year and the year before that. That's what I got. So, Mike, we'll go ahead and start with you on the voting here. Who do you got?
Well, I really like Brad's justification of the running backs are a lot more shallow. So grabbing the running backs first and just relying on that second round receivers. But I agree with Jeff, all you're about the stats about Evans and, you know, again, being dynasty and PPR heavy, I'm going Mike Evans with you, Jeff, on this one. But I totally understand Brad's pitch about, you know, swapping, putting more running backs up front because they're the ones that are a much shallow position and not as easy to fill in later rounds.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Fancy Beast, who you got?
Actually, I like arguments from both sides in this one. I think I'm gonna side with Brad on this simply because I don't see how Mike Evans can be ranked higher than people like Odell Beckham and Julio Jones. So I think for that reason only, I'd be siding with Brad.
All right, Jared, you're the tiebreaker. Who you got?
I'm siding with Brad also, only because, you know, I prefer the running backs in the first round mostly, and I see Evans sliding more to the 8th or 10th spot for me, so I'm going to go with Brad.
All right, good deal. The two of you are not invited back to the next podcast. All right. <Yeah. laughs> These next couple ones, because we're going against the clock here, I want to just go through. We're not going to vote on these. We'll just go through each one of these and just kind of give a quick blurb on each of them, because I do want to get to our sleepers, which is what something people like really listen to these podcasts for, is to find those hidden gems for their drafts. But I do want to get a few of these in. The first one I want to get in, because I know Mike Kelly is really low on this guy, and I wanted to make sure he was on this list. And that's Jay Jai. Mike is way lower than anybody else. He's got him ranked at number 53, which is really crazy. I mean, you're really going out there on that one. So 53, Jared Fox is the highest at on Jay Jai. He's got him ranked at number 11. Mike Kelly, you got to explain this one to me, because, I mean, I don't love Jay Jai, but I don't hate him that much. What's your beef with Jay Jai?
I think every time someone argues with me about him, I push him further down, honestly. No, I just, you know, he doesn't get to play Buffalo 10 times. So I don't, he had two great games against Buffalo. He had a great game against Pittsburgh, but then his playoff against Pittsburgh was a dud. You know, and he had one good game against the Jets, which really carries at the end of the game when they were trying to seal the game. After that, you know, I don't think he had, I think he had like 10 games out of the 16 he played where he put in 62 and a half yards is what you need to reach 1,000. And he had 10 games out of 16 where he had less than 62 yards. And I just, honestly, I think with Cutler starting now, I think he gets a little bit better because I think the passing game is going to be a little bit better with Cutler. But I still don't see Jay Jai as a powerhouse. 53 is probably pretty mean because, like I said, I just every time people argue with me, I get more angry and I bump them further. But I'm still not touching him with a 10-foot pole. I still don't trust him. Still not going to start him. And I don't know. I just watch him play and I just don't see someone that is going to lead someone as a running back one. If I can get him, you know, if I'm getting my second running back and I'm getting him pretty late and, you know, he's, you know, the 23rd, 24th running back off the board and I'm drafting him in the 5th round, I'll probably take him. But I can't justify taking him in the first 2 rounds at all.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Jared, go ahead and defend Jay Jai. Why are we taking him number 11?
Well, we're talking about a guy with very little competition behind him at running back who's going to see roughly 270 rushing attempts and be targeted in the passing game, which, like Mike said, is going to be better with Cutler. So I'm thinking, you know, 1,200 yards and 9 scores isn't impossible for this guy. And then you got Devontae Parker, who's playing better, Jarvis Landry, who is just great, honestly, in my opinion, and Mike Pouncey, if he stays healthy, the offensive line should hold up enough for Jai to be, you know, a top 7 or 8 running back this year.
All right. Good stuff. All right, let's move on to the next one we got on this list here. And I think Brad is on the same sort of boat as Jay Jai on this one. It's going to be Todd Gurley. We're going to go Brad, and actually, Mike, you're on this one as well. So Brad's got Todd Gurley ranked at number 52. Which is basically right one spot above where Mike Kelly has Jay Jai. And then, Mike, you got him ranked as number 8. So, Brad, tell us why we shouldn't be drafting Todd Gurley.
All right. Well, let me start off by saying I don't think he's Trent Richardson 2.0. I do think he's a good player, and he might rebound a little bit from last year's season. But, you know, they got a new coaching staff with the Rams now. They still have Jared Goff at quarterback. So I think it's going to take some time for the team to gel. They also have some new offensive linemen, which should ultimately improve the offensive line. But once again, an offensive line is not going to gel overnight. So I think there's going to be some rough going for him early in the season, first half of the season. And by the time you're 0-6 with Todd Gurley as your number one running back, then you're going to be second guessing that. So also in PPR leagues, I think he gets jumped by, you know, a few pass catching backs, the Ty Montgomery's, you know, maybe even the Bilal Powell's and Danny Woodhead's. So if it's coming to my pick when Gurley's up, available second, third round in a PPR league, I'm not clicking the button.
All right. Good stuff. Mike, tell us why we should be drafting Todd Gurley number 8 overall.
Well, I think the improved offensive line is a reason to draft him. I think it is a better offense. I think Jared Goff has had a huge leap in growth. just with the better system, the better supporting cast. You add Watkins, you add Woods, who I think is one of the best run-blocking wide receivers in the NFL. You add a guy like Kupp. You know, I know he wasn't a big-name school, but, you know, you catch 720 balls, you got to be good no matter where you're doing it. You got to have hands. And that's an exaggeration of the number. I don't know off the top of my head how many he caught. But I just think all of those things, and the team is going to be excited. They were so depressed under Fisher that, you know, it's one of those bounces. You see it a lot in basketball, that when a new coach comes in, the team plays better initially because they don't want ownership to think it was the player's fault. They want it to think it was the coach's fault. And so I just think that they're just going to have a spark under them. They're going to play hard. They're going to hit hard. They're going to play great defense. And I just, for all those reasons, I think Gurley is my bounce back candidate. I think he's just, we saw what he can do 2 years ago. And even with all the troubles he had last year, with how many times people were behind the line of scrimmage before he even got the ball, you know, he still managed to put up running back two numbers. I just think we're going to see a lot closer to his rookie year than we will last year.
All right. Good stuff from both of you. All right, I got one more with me and with Fantasy Beast. It's going to be Isaiah Crowell. Fantasy Beast is on the negative side here. He's got him ranked at number 42. I think I have him ranked probably the highest of everybody at number 17. So Fantasy Beast, tell me why you don't like Isaiah Crowell.
I think this goes back to kind of my Jordan Howard take from earlier. I don't like running backs that are on bad teams. And I think the Browns have improved slightly from last season, but I don't think they're a fantastic team at all. I've seen some people point to Crowell being better this year because they think he'll catch more passes. He caught 40 passes last year, and I actually have seen a lot of experts project him for fewer than that this year. So in PPR leagues, I don't think he's getting a boost. So you're either banking on him going crazy with the yardage or crazy with the touchdown. And I think with the Browns having a lot of short drives, I don't see either of those happening, really.
Fair enough. I think my love for Isaiah Crowell actually comes from the shallowness of the running back position. I think you're going to have a guy who's the bell cow. I know they have Duke Johnson there, but I think he's kind of shown over the last few years that Crowell is sort of the bell cow in that offense. He is by far their best offensive weapon now that Terrell Pryor is gone. I think he's the red zone option, and I actually do have him ranked. I have him projected with more receptions this year than he had last year. I do think that they're going to throw the ball to him a lot more than they did last year. I think each year that he's been in the league, he's increased his receptions. He did have 40 last year, which is pretty respectable for a running back that's not deemed as a pass catching running back. So I think that his receptions will go up a little bit. Like I said, with Terrell Pryor gone, he becomes the clear cut red zone option. They don't have too many big bodied options in the receiving game. So I think if they do get down close in there, it is going to be Crowell getting the ball. It will be a little difficult because it'll be like Crowell getting the ball and the entire stadium knows he's getting the ball. So who knows if he can get into the end zone. But I think his usage overall, I think in the shallows of the position, I think makes him a 17th overall pick. All right, we'll do one more and then we'll move into our sleepers here. I do want to get Mike Kelly once again. I tell you, when I was going through doing these matchups, basically what I did, I was just kind of scrolling down and looking at numbers. When I saw two numbers that were sort of way off, I scrolled back up to see who the rankers were. And I literally could have done the entire segment with Mike Kelly. It seemed like every single one that was like, oh, this guy's way off, I'd scroll back up and I was like, oh, it's Mike Kelly again with the difference. So once again, we're going to go with Christian McCaffrey here. Mike Kelly has him ranked as one of the highest at number 18. And Fantasy Beast, once again, you're up. You got him ranked at number 56. Michael, go with you first.
Okay. Well, the biggest thing, you know, the only person that stands in McCaffrey's way is Jonathan Stewart. And I feel like he's been in the league since the 70s. You know, most people we'll sit here and want to say, well, you know, McCaffrey's going to be the PPR back. He's only got good hands. He's going to be the next Danny Woodhead and blah, blah, blah. And I actually disagree. I don't think he's going to get his share of receptions. But you know, from what I've seen so far, I think he's a pretty darn good runner. You know, he hits that corner, and when he turns upfield, that burst he has is fantastic. And I don't think he's afraid of the contact. I think he'll run between the tackles. And I think I think he will quickly take over Stewart. Stewart will get the veterans courtesy, I think, to start week one. But I think you'll see a lot of hot hand stuff, and it's going to be McCaffrey down the stretch. And I just, you know, he is going to get his receptions. He's going to get plenty of carries. And I've moved him up higher recently after watching him run a little bit, because I was a little worried initially, but I just, watching him play the eye test, there's just no doubt in my mind that this kid, he's a baller, and he can play at the NFL level.
All right. Good stuff. All right, Faith of Beast, go ahead and tell us about your hate for McCaffrey.
Yeah, I think this is Mike's dynasty hat coming back on, because I love McCaffrey for dynasty, but I'm just a little bit concerned for this year. I think that in PPR leagues, he's a little bit better because he's got that receiving ability, something that Stewart doesn't have. But last season, Cam Newton only allowed his running backs to catch 34 passes. So unless the Panthers change their entire offensive scheme to fit a rookie, I have a hard time seeing McCaffrey produce on his ADP. I think that Mike Clay from ESPN has Newton and Stewart projected to combine for 10.7 rushing touchdowns. So I think if they're going to get that amount of goal line work ahead of McCaffrey, his scoring is going to come from a little bit farther out. He's definitely talented to do that, but I just don't know if he can be consistently counted on week to week, unless you're in a PPR league and he's your running back too.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Now let's get into some sleepers. This is probably the favorite segment of all my listeners, is they like to hear all the sleepers that we sort of peg as sleepers. We'll kind of go around. Like I said, we're up against the time clock here. So instead of going with each position and doing every single ranker with the position, I'll just go around the table and pick a position and let you give me your sleepers from that position. Starting at the quarterback position, we will go with Jared. Who you got for your sleeper quarterback this year?
I've got kind of an odd one that may surprise some people. I like Sam Bradford this year. His ADP is looking at around 219, but he's got the second easiest quarterback strength of schedule. Let's look at last year, for example. He set the all-time pass completion percentage record without even getting a rep. He didn't even get the prep in the offseason because he was hurt. Now he's got another year under his belt. I love his receivers, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, and then they added Dalvin Cook, who's going to be a PPR monster, in my opinion, this year. So I think all those factors make Sam Bradford a really good late-round sleeper.
Sam Bradford, yeah, I definitely wouldn't have gone that route, but I can see him. You can basically get him as probably the last pick before your defense and your kicker in 10- and 12-team leagues. He may be even going undrafted in some leagues that small, so I can definitely see him being a sleeper. And if that offense has improved at all, you know, he does have the accuracy to turn it into a pretty good season. So, yeah, I could see that happening. All right, running back. Mike, we'll go with you at the running position. Who you like?
Not sure how much of a sleeper, but a lot of people seem to be down on him, though, is Amir Abdullah. I think he's currently going 63rd, so you're talking fifth round, so it's not much of a sleeper, but I've seen a lot of drafts where he's dropped further than that because people just have no faith. You know, he's pegged this injury history when he's really only had one injury. Yes, it knocked him out for an entire season, but over the 2 years, it's really the only injury he's really had. And it's a high-powered offense in Detroit. He's got great burst, great hands. He's got great running ability. And if he stays healthy and he can get, you know, 200 touches carrying the ball, 50 or 60 receiving, which I think is very reasonable, he could easily finish inside the top 10 at running back.
Nice. Amir Abdullah. Yeah, I think people are afraid of that injury risk. But, yeah, I agree. I think in Detroit, if he can be what they thought he was going to be in his rookie season, I think he can definitely be a good pickup there in some of the later mid-round picks there. Let's stay on running back and go with you, Brad. Who you got for your running back sleeper?
My running back sleeper that I have is Rex Burkhead. He was going to be a popular breakout for this season until the Patriots went and signed Gillislee as well. So I think they definitely think highly of him. He obviously plays in a good offense. And I think the fact that he's so versatile that he can play anywhere from being the goal line running back to the third down running back to even lining up in the slot, I think that versatility is going to give him kind of a high floor. And if one or two of those other Patriot running backs happen to get injured, I think he could be in for a potential workhorse type load as the season progresses. So Rex Burkhead's my guy.
Nice. Yeah, I like him as well. I liked him a little bit more until I saw that last preseason game where I think he sat out that game. But I think, yeah, I think definitely the Patriots, you never know what they're going to do with the running position, but I think he can be a good sleeper in those late rounds. All right, let's move on to receiver. Fancy Beast, who you got for receiver?
My sleeper receiver is Dante Moncrief. Fantasy Football Calculator has him as the 105th player off the board in PPR leagues. And I think as the wide receiver two in an Andrew Luck offense, if Andrew Luck can come back healthy, I think that Moncrief is just going to smash his ADP. He scored 7 touchdowns last year on just 30 catches, and he's got 16 touchdowns on 126 career receptions. So he's a number two option in general. I think he's a little bit downgraded in PPR because I'm not sure he catches a ton of balls. But with his touchdown upside and the fact that Andrew Luck will be throwing him a lot of footballs, I think that he's a great late-round sleeper.
All right, good stuff. We'll stay on receiver, and we'll come back around and see who went first. Jared, did you go first, or did you go first?
Yes, I did, Jared.
All right, yeah, go ahead and take a receiver.
Well, I'm going to stick with my super deep sleepers with, like, Sam Bradford. I really like J.J. Nelson for the Cardinals. If you look at his last few weeks of last season, Nelson finishes a wide receiver 11 in PPR scoring formats. I know John Brown's always hurt. He's got that sickle cell trait business going on. So J.J. Nelson should slide right into the second receiver role. Arizona actually has the 6th easiest strength of schedule for wide receivers this year, which helps. So I could see him, you know, doing some damage.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm going to give you one of mine here. I think y'all kind of took two of mine, actually, but I'm trying to scroll here to see where he's being drafted at. And he's one of those deep sleepers too, like Jared's on, because I do play in some very deep leagues. I got a 16-team league. I got a 14-team league. So when I think sleeper, I think guys that are going undrafted, usually in 10 or 12-man leagues. But the guy I like is Ted Ginn Jr. He's actually going to be the number two receiver in that Saints offense. They're keeping Snead as the number three. If you look what Ginn did the year that Cam Newton went off, he had 10 touchdowns that year. His hands are horrible, but you know what? If Breeze can hit him with that little soft touch pass that he's got on those deep routes, I think Ginn can be a big addition to that Saints offense. He gives them that vertical stretching of the field. So I think Ted Ginn Jr., who's probably being undrafted in a lot of 10 or 12-team leagues, could be one of those sleepers that we're just completely overlooking because he can't catch the ball very often. All right, I got one last segment to wrap it up, and it has nothing to do with fantasy football. It's just sort of a fun segment that I wanted to do. I'm going to take y'all fast forward to week one of the NFL season. You're sitting in front of your friend's TV, or maybe you're sitting in front of your own TV. Maybe you're at a bar, whatever the case may be. I want to know what your drink of choice is. What do you have in your hand? Mike, we'll go with you first.
One hand's probably a Yingling beer, and the second hand is a shot of vodka.
Nice. All right, Brad, what do you got in your hand first week one of the season?
I'm pretty basic, too. It'd probably just be a beer or two and maybe mix in a hard cider or so.
Nice. Jared, what are you drinking down there in Texas?
Handmade bottle of Fireball. That's my Cowboys cruise to victory.
Nice. Fantasy Beast, you're recently married. What are you doing week one of the NFL season?
You know, I'm from Wisconsin, so I have a ice cold glass of milk.
Really? Nice. Okay.
Absolutely.
Definitely didn't see that one coming. All right. Milk. Okay. I think week one of the season, I'm with you, Mike. Yingling is definitely my choice, my beer of choice. It's, you know, pretty inexpensive. You can get a 12 pack for like under $10 sometimes, and if you get it on sale. So I'm a Yingling person myself, and I will definitely have a couple Yinglings. I'll actually be on vacation for week one. I'll be at the Outer Banks in North Carolina. So I will definitely have me a couple Yinglings before the games even kick off. So, all right. That wraps up the podcast, guys. I want to thank all of y'all for coming on tonight. The listeners, once again, you can follow these guys. You can follow Mike Kelly on Twitter at Mike Kelly DLP. That's Kelly with it's K-E-L-L-E-Y. You can follow Jared Fox at jfox023. Brad Richter's at Rotopilot, and Fantasy Beast is at Fantasy Beast 15. Guys, thanks again for coming on, and I hope we can do this again sometime during the season.